This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
I would like to work a little further on an astonishing medrash that we learned last night, and to understand it a little bit more deeply in its context, and to expand it a little further. We know that life is not easy, and we know that even people who appear to be living in relative comfort have their difficulties and their tzoras too, and certainly those who are having obvious tzoras. And we know that the suffering that there is in the world takes various forms, and some of it is terribly undignified, and some of it is terribly painful, and all of it causes enormous hardship. There is social suffering. People don't have friends. There's loneliness. Terrible thing, loneliness. And I don't think we have any clue of how serious a problem loneliness is. In our society, right here, never mind, in other parts of the world, elderly people sometimes, and sometimes not elderly people. Sometimes very, very ordinary people, young people, young men, young women, desperately lonely. And sometimes even people who have social relationships are lonely because they're not adequate social relationships. Loneliness is a terrible form of suffering. One has to handle it with it. One has to cope with it. There's illness. Now, there's temporary illness. There's permanent illness. There's terminal illness. Illness with a lot of pain, with a lot of indignity, with a lot of suffering. There's social suffering in terms of ostracization. People who are lonely not because they don't have friends, but because they're actually socially ostracized for one reason or another. There's loss of family. Loss of family through death, chas v'sholem, a dear one, a beloved one. Loss of a parent is a terrible thing. Loss of a spouse. Loss of a child, even harder to bear, harder to carry. That's suffering, enormous suffering there is in the world. Suffering through loss, not by death. A family breakup, a divorce, a loss of a friendship. All of these are parts of the tsar, parts of the challenges, the difficulties that people go through. The tsar gidul bonim, the pain and suffering of raising children. And some of the pain and suffering is all just part of life, and it's not so bad, but sometimes a child goes off a little bit. Sometimes a child gets into bad company, and a parent has to deal with that and has to cope with that. And sometimes a person has a lot of tzoras altogether. He has a child who's on drugs, and he's just lost a parent, and he's busy going through a divorce, and he's not very well either. Sometimes it comes heaped one on top of the other, not easy to handle. All sorts of tzoras. And to protect ourselves, we sometimes make ourselves a little insensitive to the tzoras that are going on around us. But that's not a solution either, because that makes us unable to really deal with them and to be of any help to people who are experiencing those tzoras. And yet the medrash that was so astonishing last night is one that says, "Ein ba'ilum koshe min ho'anius." Shehu koshe mikol yisurim sheba'ilu. With all those tzoras that we've spoken about, and many more that we haven't even spoken about, the hardest of all of them is poverty. The hardest of all the tzoras, shehu koshe mikol yisurim sheba'ilu. There is no suffering in the world so difficult to bear as the suffering of poverty. Omru Rabbi Seinu, and Chazal explained, that doesn't mean that poverty is more difficult to bear than any other form of suffering. But kol ha-yusurim l'tzadechot v'anius l'tzadechot. If you were to take a scale and weigh them up, you could put all the suffering into one side of the scale. Everything. the loneliness and the tsargidul bodim and the loss of people through death and the loss of dear ones through family separations and all of them, illness, into one side. V'haniyus l'tzad echad. And you put poverty into the other side and it will still tip in favor of poverty. It's the worst kind of suffering. Let's stop there for a moment. The reaction of most people to that, let's say I weren't to quote it in the name of a medrash, if I were just to express my personal opinion and say, in my opinion, poverty is the worst form of suffering. The general response to that would be, disagree. I disagree with you. Poverty, as long as one has one's health, poverty, okay, it's terrible, it's not a nice thing at all, very difficult to handle. But if one has one's health, one has one's family, one has friends, one can manage. How can you compare that to the other kinds of suffering? That's the general reaction that I would get, and probably the same reaction that I would give until I'd thought it through. And this is an indication of how we have to learn Torah, because we have to realize when we see something in the Torah with which we disagree, we've got to realize that we need to do some modification of our own thinking. That means there's something in our value system, the way we look at the world, which causes us to be non-aligned with this medrash. And that's what it is, we're not aligned with this medrash. When we say it, it sounds alien, it sounds foreign, it doesn't sound something that we're comfortable with. But yet, that's what Chazal say. Which means that Chazal have a way of looking at life different to the way we look at life. And what I want to do this evening, Emir Tzashem, is to understand what that difference is. What is it in the way that we look at life that makes us find this medrash so difficult? What is it in the way Chazal look at life that enables Chazal to say that all the suffering in the entire world does not come up to the suffering of poverty? If you want to see where this comes from, Borei, come and have a look. When on last Monday night the Satan began to discuss with Hashem the question of whether Iyov is such a righteous man or not, and he says to him, you've given him money and children, wealth, health, and of course he serves you, of course he fears you, Hashem, but take that all away and see what will happen. So Hashem turns to Iyov and says, Ma ata roitze, anius or yisurin? Iyov, I've got to punish you, I've got to subject you to suffering. But I'm prepared to give you the choice. Do you want suffering of the kind which we know he later got, the most terrible suffering that any human being has ever suffered? Or would you rather have poverty? Amalei Iyov, Iyov said to Hashem, Ribbono Olam, Mekabel ani olai kol yusurin shebo'ilam. I hereby accept upon myself all the suffering in the entire world. Veloi anius, but not poverty. That I'm not prepared to accept. What's disturbing to us is, not only do we find difficulty in understanding this medrash, but ask yourselves whether it sounds the kind of medrash that you expect to hear from any frum person today. Is it just I that am not aligned with it? Or is it our whole Jewish society, our whole religious society that is not aligned with it? To understand that Iyov would say, I'm prepared to accept anything, just not poverty. Doesn't sound right. And we needed to explain, we began the process last night, why that is so. Why the Torah sees poverty as something so terribly severe, something so difficult to bear. And it ties up with another chazal which people tend to explain in all sorts of ways to get around the apparent difficulty. But that chazal really reflects the same concern here. You remember when Yaakov was fleeing from Lavan with his family, and he crossed the Nachal Yabok, he crossed that little stream, and he left behind a couple of little odds and ends, and he went back to collect them. At risk to his life, that's where he met Sorei Shel Esav. And Chazal say, because tzaddikim chavivim aleihem mamenom yoser migufom, Because tzaddikim value their money more than their own bodies. Very difficult thing to say. It's the kind of chazal that anti-Semites would quote if they knew about it. See what the Jews are? They're righteous ones, value money more than their own lives. That's the Jews. Sounds like an anti-Semitic statement. That's when we hear that, again, if I were to quote that to you and you didn't know that chazal, and I would say that the righteous Jews value money more than life. Who do you think said that? What would you say? Hitler. Probably. Or one of his agents. Not Hitler. Nor one of his agents. Chazal. The Gemara says. If I would come along to you and say, the righteous ones, given the option, would rather choose all the suffering in the world than giving up their material wealth. Who said it? Hitler or one of his agents? No. Chazal, a Midrash. What is it? Here we've got Chazal that sounds so incongruent with our belief system and with what we understand. Which means that our understanding of the usage and purpose of wealth is cockeyed. Our understanding of the usage, when I talk about wealth, I'm not talking necessarily about enormous wealth. I'm talking about the possession of the means to make purchases, to transact business. Whether it's to buy a loaf of bread, or it's to buy a house, or it's to buy a motor car, whatever it is that one needs to do, the ability, having the ability to transact, to conduct a commercial transaction. That's what I'm talking about. Well, it's not important at what level. We're not discussing that at the moment. There's another medrash in this week's parsha, a little bit earlier. The medrash says, in kesef tal ve'es ami, bo re'ei, says the medrash, come and see. Kol mi sheyesh boi osher, anybody who has a great deal of wealth, v'nosen tzedoka la'anim, and he gives charity to the poor, v'eino malve beribis, and he doesn't lend money with interest, gives interest-free loans, ma'alin olov, the Torah regards it, ke'ilu kiyem kol ha-mitzvois kulon. The Torah regards it as if he has observed all the mitzvahs, every one of them. Just listen to that. You hear what the Midrash says? That if a person is wealthy and is charitable with his wealth and lends his money without interest, it's as if he has kept all the Torah, the entire Torah. I was with a prominent businessman, Jewish businessman this week. And I was with a non-Jewish person visiting this Jewish businessman. This Jewish businessman obviously felt a bit uncomfortable as to why he wasn't wearing a yarmulke, why he couldn't offer us something kosher to eat. He felt obviously very uncomfortable. How would the goy understand this? Here's a rabbi talking to a Jewish businessman and something's wrong. So he felt it necessary to explain to the goy. And he said, I once was talking to a friend of mine, said this non-observant Jewish businessman, he said, a rabbi, and I was very depressed because I don't keep a kosher home and I don't keep Shabbos, and I would find it very difficult to do so at this stage in my life, and I feel terribly inadequate, and I went through a stage of feeling very depressed about the fact that I'm a nobody Jewishly. And this person, this rabbi, explained to me that there's nobody who keeps all the mitzvahs. It's a matter of nobody keeps everything 100%. Some people keep kosher and they're very, very meticulous about the kashrus that they keep, but they talk Lashon Hora, which is more serious than not keeping kosher. Other people would never talk Lashon Hora, but they don't keep Shabbos. Each one has an area. Another person keeps Shabbos and wouldn't talk Lashon Hora, but he's not straight in his business dealings. We all have areas that we're weak in. And this rabbi said to this man, if your strength is in tzedakah and in lending money interest-free, which as a matter of fact he does, you're on top of the ladder. That doesn't mean you shouldn't keep Shabbos too. That doesn't mean you shouldn't keep kashrus as well. But you don't have to feel too embarrassed about where you are vis-a-vis the people who are externally religious. Because there are other areas that they don't keep. But at least in your area, if you're lending money interest-free and giving lots of charity, it's ki'ilu ki'im kola teiro kulo. That means when we're speaking to a Jew who operates this way, who might be a totally irreligious Jew, we have to treat him with a great deal of respect. We have to treat him with the same respect that we treat somebody who keeps the entire Torah. We have to treat him like a tzaddik, because he is a tzaddik. To be able to be wealthy and to use one's wealth correctly, to be able to lend money without interest, give charity, that goes against all the laws of business. It goes against all the laws of wealth creation. To give money away, to lend money without interest, the only reason that he would do that is because of a great sense of Yerushalayim, a belief that it's the right thing to do. That's an enormous level of commitment. And the Chazal say, Ki'ilu ki'im kol ha-Torah kula. We treat him as if he keeps the entire Torah. Of course, as far as Hashem is concerned, like everything, like all of us, we're punished for the things we don't do. You can't come along and say, but I did these two things, so forget the rest. We'll have to give din v'cheshbon, we will have to explain all the things we were inadequate in. But in terms of weighing and balancing, the person who is able to reach these levels in his business handling is on an extremely high madrega, on a very high level. So we see that the Torah has a strange attitude, or an unusual attitude, to wealth. What it is, and what it's used for, and how it operates. Let us try and understand it more fundamentally. One of the most fundamental human emotions is the desire to be independent. And you see that starting already with a little child. A little baby starts and he's dependent, totally dependent. And he strives very early on to establish his independence. Firstly by being able to hold onto his own bottle, then by being able to fetch his own bottle, to be able to do his own thing, and he gets quite determined, he wants to do things himself. And then we see that process being taken further through adolescence. That's what the whole adolescence phase is, of the child trying to establish his or her independence of his parents. I'm an independent human being, I can make my own decisions, and I can stand on my own two feet. He needs to become independent. Because being dependent is something against the very essence of being a human being, of the way Hashem created us. Why did Hashem create us? He created us because He wanted to do good. He wanted to do chesed to us. Because part of being God is being good, and part of being good is doing good. To do good, you've got to have somebody to do good to. So He needed Kalim, so to say, kibiyochel. He doesn't need anything, but in our understanding, God required the vessels to receive His goodness. So He made us. People to whom, beings to whom He could be good. But there's a problem. When you're good to people, there's a certain condescension. People become dependent on you. And so it's not necessarily a full chesed just to be good to people. So, He created the world in such a way that we could work for the goodness that we get from Him. We could deserve it. So that we're able to pay for it. And that is the beginning of the concept of a commercial transaction. Although that wasn't in a commercial sense, that's in a spiritual sense. But the idea that I want to give you something, but it's best for you if you pay for it. The concept of commerce originates with the idea behind the creation of the world. That to give somebody for nothing is not the ultimate goodness. The ultimate goodness is to give somebody something in a way that does not leave him feeling indebted. That's the ultimate. Give it to him in a way that doesn't leave him feeling indebted. Because to leave him feeling indebted leaves him feeling dependent. And dependency is the most undignified feeling that the human being is capable of. It's the most undignified thing. A person has to walk around on crutches. Chas v'shalom. A person's lying in a hospital bed and he has to be fed. He has to have his bathroom functions taken care of. Terribly undignified. We like to be able to take care of ourselves. A person who needs help feels a lack of dignity. And so in order to preserve the dignity of man, and Hashem didn't want to create a being that doesn't have dignity, that wasn't His idea. He wanted to create a being that is full of dignity. And He wants to give him goodness. How are you going to give him goodness and keep his dignity intact? There we have the creation of commerce. The ability to pay. I'll give you the goodness, you'll pay for it. Your dignity is intact. Wonderful system. And commerce, material commerce as we have it in the world, is a physical reflection of that spiritual concept. we're doing in our physical lives, in our physical interaction, we're interacting with that spiritual concept, which is giving without detracting from dignity. If you take the commas out of chesed, then you've got a detraction of dignity. Put the commas into chesed, and you've got the maintenance of dignity. Now, commas and chesed doesn't necessarily mean that you pay for everything with money. So if a young girl offers to babysit for your children, you shouldn't have to say, how much will it cost? Not every chesed has to have a price tag to it. But if there is the concept of commas in chesed, then you need to understand that if the young girl says, no, it won't cost anything at all, it's a chesed, it's a pleasure for me to be able to do it for you, you owe something back to her. And you'll have to find a way to pay it with some other chesed. That's the principle of commas. If you want to keep your dignity intact, you need to repay that chesed too. So every time you get a chesed from somebody else, you need to know that that obligates you to somehow repay or to remain indebted. Now, never today, many people are cripples. They don't mind being indebted. It doesn't go against their grain. But that's not the way it ought to be. We ought to feel more uncomfortable with indebtedness than with any other feeling at all. You see, today we work differently. Today, if you become the head of a bank and you're indebted to the bank, it's very easy. If you feel uncomfortable, you just wipe off the debt. That's all. Let somebody else pay for it. And we laugh, we giggle. But we do the same all the time. Somebody does me a chesed, I owe him something. Let's forget about it. Forget about it. Start again. I don't owe him anything. We're very quick to write off our debts. Don't think what he did was something, of course it was immoral. But don't think it's something that we wouldn't do. We do it every single day of our lives. Every time we don't respond to an indebtedness, every time we don't recognize an indebtedness, we're doing exactly the same. Somebody lent me the money, or it wasn't money, he gave me of his time, he gave me of his care, of his concern, of his thoughtfulness, whatever. And I don't respond, what am I doing? I'm writing it off. Forget it. Why should I pay back? We do the same. Morally and ethically, we're doing the same all the time. Because we don't feel uncomfortable with indebtedness. But that's not the Torah approach. And here we begin to reach the core reason why we find this chazal so difficult to interpret. Because we don't understand the principle on which it's based. It's based on the principle that the most uncomfortable feeling in the world, the greatest suffering in the world, is the suffering of indignity. Now we do understand that, because this move for euthanasia is based on what? Rather death than indignity. So there is an understanding that indignity is the worst thing in the world. The only thing that we don't understand is that what is indignity? Indignity is indebtedness. That's what indignity is. That is the ultimate of indignity, is to be indebted. If we would understand that the ultimate of indignity is indebtedness, then we would understand what money is. Money is a wonderful thing. And it's a creation of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Money was not made by man. And we see that from Parsha Shkolim today. What did Hashem say? When you count Bnei Yisrael, let them each give half a shekel. And through that they will be atoned, through the giving of a koyin, they'll achieve kaporo, they'll achieve atonement. Unbelievable. And when Moshe said, I don't know what this koyin looks like, Hashem showed him from Shamayim the design of the koyin. What does that mean? The origin of money is in Shamayim, not here. We look at money as something dirty and something disgusting, and we need to do it. So, okay, what can you do? You know, you need to deal with money, so we'll deal with it. But we almost feel like washing our hands when we're finished with it. That's the Catholic influence on the way we think. It's not a Jewish concept. The Jewish concept is that when Moshe didn't know what a shekel looked like, Hashem showed him. Because it came as a concept in Shemayim, a koyin, what a koyin is. What is money? Money is the most unbelievable creation that enables a human being to pay for his chasodim. That's what it is. Enables a human being to retain his dignity. If we didn't have money, how would we do it? How could we retain our dignity? We need to eat bread. So bread would be supplied to us. By who? Somebody will supply the bread. Somebody will be paying for the bread. How will we respond? Okay, so like the old bartering system. So I'm the shoemaker. I'll give him shoes. He'll give me bread. And so it goes on. But that's money already. That's transaction. Money is the ability to transfer chasodim backwards and forwards. That's what it is. Money is chesed. I've worked for this money and I'm giving it to you. so that you can enjoy the toil of you can enjoy the fruits of my toil in response for what you have given me. That's what money means. When you go to the shop and you buy an item and you give them money, you're giving them your labor. You're saying to them, I'm prepared to work for you. If you're paying him 10 rand and it takes you 20 minutes to make 10 rand, you're saying to the shopkeeper, I'm willing to work for you for 20 minutes to give you of my labor, so as not to be indebted to you for the item you've just given. And here we are, here's the 10 rand which you can use just the same as 20 minutes of my labor. That's what the transaction means. And if we would think of that when we transact, then we would realize that our transactions are spiritual activities, not material activities. That is the ability to discharge our indebtedness. That's what money is. And then we can take it one step further. And without money, if we didn't have money, we couldn't discharge our indebtedness. If we couldn't discharge our indebtedness, if we couldn't just discharge our indebtedness, then what am I left with? Indignity. What is the worst suffering a human being can have? Indignity. So here we come. Once you understand the principles of what the Ribbono Shel Olam created commercial transactions for, once you understand the principles of money and the principles of wealth, then you realize without money I don't have the ability to discharge my indebtedness. Without the ability to discharge my indebtedness, I don't have dignity. Without dignity, I don't have anything. Now we must take this one step further. And we must ask ourselves, but why is it then that we would rather suffer indignity than discomfort? What is Eve's choice? Eve's choice is no money or no health, no family, no society, no nothing. In other words, either everything else will be taken from you, but you'll be left with your money, or your money will be taken away from you, but you'll be left with everything else. And Eve chooses the former. I'm prepared to lose everything. My wife, my children, my friends, my social standing, my health, virtually my very body, almost my life. I'm prepared to come to the edge of death. I'm prepared to come to the point where I will plead with you, Ribbono Shel Olam, to take my life, which he comes to. That's how much suffering I'm prepared to take. To the point where I'm prepared to get on my knees and plead with you to kill me. But don't touch my wealth, says Eve. Why? Because indignity is spiritual suffering. Discomfort is physical suffering. And what this chazal means is that indignity, which is a spiritual suffering, perhaps a relatively small spiritual suffering, it's nothing like the suffering, chas v'sholom, that one goes through in Gehenim and all these kind of things. It's the smallest of spiritual suffering. It's spiritual suffering in this world. The smallest spiritual suffering is worse than the greatest physical suffering. And that's what we need to understand. That at the end of the day, physical suffering is still only physical. It is, as terrible as it is to cope with, but it's still only physical. Spiritual suffering affects the neshama. That's what we're asked to weigh up when we're choosing between wealth or bodily suffering. We look at it with our Catholic eyes, and we say, of course we would rather give up wealth, because wealth is evil. What's more important than life and health? But if we put on our Jewish spectacles, we see a different scenario altogether. Wealth is not evil and filthy. Wealth is man's ability to repay indebtedness, which is the condition of his dignity. Take that away and you take his dignity away. Take his dignity away and you're affecting his neshama, you're affecting his spirit, not his body. Take away his health, what are you affecting? His body, that's all. But you've left him his dignity. And dignity is more important than comfort in Jewish life. In all other life, comfort is more important than dignity. In our terms, dignity is more important than comfort. And so we would rather suffer any other form of suffering, but not poverty. Because poverty deprives us of dignity. Poverty deprives us of the ability to repay our indebtedness. And that idea we've got also expressed in that piece of Rabbeinu Yonah that we learnt the other evening before Mayriv. By the way, virtually every evening in this Beis HaMedrash, apart from the 4 or 5 Gemara Shiurim that are taking place, or the different levels of Gemara Shiurim, there's a Rabbeinu Yonah Shiur that takes 5 minutes. But some of the most wonderful gems of understanding of Torah occur during those 5 minutes. So those of you who are davening Mincha and Ma'ariv, in any case, it's an idea to find out when we daven so that you can take advantage of that shiur. Rabbeinu Yona points out that in the case of the Torah, where a man does a terrible thing, he hires false witnesses to give evidence that his betrothed one has been adulterous. The witnesses are found out to be false in time. Before anything happens, the woman would have been killed. But Beis Din cross-examine and they find out that the witnesses are false. So she's not killed and nothing happens. Now he's done a terrible thing, hasn't he? And he gets punished. And the reason that he gets punished, says the Torah, is ki hotzi shem ro, because he blemished her name. The reason that he is punished is not given because he sought to kill her. It was attempted murder. He planned to have this woman killed. And he hired false witnesses to have her killed. What a terribly unjust and immoral act this was. That says Rabbeinu Yonah, this is in the Shah Shlishi Simon Kuf Yud Beis. Vehizkir Oven Hutzah Shemra. Why is he punished? Not for planning to kill her, not for hiring false witnesses, for something much worse than that. For embarrassing her. Ki hu ha'ovein ha'godol yoseh min ha'mevakesh nefesh l'safoisa. Because humiliating a person is worse than attempted murder. Ki tzar ha'kelimo mar mimovis. Because the pain of embarrassment is worse than the pain of death. That's a Jewish outlook. Very different. Murder is a terrible thing. Attempted murder is a terrible thing. And everybody goes up in arms. You hear, another person was murdered in Johannesburg. Let's emigrate from this terrible place. We get very panic stricken when people are murdered, and so we should. But when people are embarrassed, when people are humiliated, would we talk of emigrating because people humiliate each other around here? No, quite a comfortable place to live. There's security, nobody's murdered, no thefts. It's a nice place to live. That's much worse. Kitzar haklimo mar mimovis. Because the pain of humiliation is worse than the pain of death. To people who have dignity, of course. Once people have lost their dignity, they don't worry about humiliation. But if a person has dignity, then humiliation is spiritual suffering. Death is only physical suffering. All you lose when you get killed, or when you die, chas v'sholom, all you lose is your body. Everything else remains intact. Quite a serious loss, but it's not the end of the world by any means. It's the beginning of the world to come. So what do they say? It's the beginning of the rest of my life. Not the end of the world. But when you embarrass somebody, you're actually depriving him of dignity. You're affecting his neshama. You're affecting his ability to function as a spiritual being. That's far more serious than killing him. That's how far dignity goes. And there again, just as we see the loss of dignity as worse than the loss of life, so we see the loss of wealth as worse than the loss of health. Because with a loss of health, there is not necessarily a loss of dignity. With a loss of wealth, there is a loss of dignity. And we see that expressed as the Medrash goes on into the next line. And Eud explains to God why it is that he feels so strongly in this way. And he says, "Kesheitze lashuk ve'ein biyodi pruto liknus ma'uicha." When I go out into the marketplace and I haven't got a coin to buy something with, what will I eat? And note, as I mentioned last night, he doesn't say, if I'm impoverished, what will I eat? That's all he had to say. Im ein li pruto, ma'eichel, if I've got no money, what will I eat? He doesn't say that. He knows he won't die of hunger. He knows he's part of a community. And if he hasn't got any money, the Chesed Society will get together and they'll bring him meals. He'll have what to eat. He knows that. He's not going to die of hunger. Jews don't die of hunger. As I think it was the Chofetz Chaim who said it possibly. Jews don't die of hunger. They might die of pride, that they're not willing to ask for charity, for help. But you don't find the Jew who needs help and asks for help, he lets it known that he needs help, you don't find that he dies of hunger. It doesn't happen. So Eve knew that too. He wasn't going to die of hunger. So what does he say? Kesheitze lashuk, when I go out into the marketplace and I cannot transact business, even just to eat, Marichal, what am I going to eat? The answer is somebody will give you something to eat. I know somebody will give me something to eat. And what will that do to my dignity when somebody else has to give me something to eat? Do I have to live with that? I would rather live with all the pain and the suffering in the world than have to take a handout. That's a Jew. That's a Jew. A different way of looking at things. A completely different way of doing things. Kesheitze lashuk. I enjoy going out into the marketplace and transacting business. I enjoy buying my food. I enjoy paying for it. That preserves my dignity. What is life without commercial transaction? What is the life without being able to reciprocate? What is life without being able to discharge indebtedness? What kind of indignity do you want me to suffer? And it's not just the poverty. Because later on, when things get really tough, and Eve's complaining too awfully, I'm giving you, by the way, a little bit of a trailer for the Eve shoe, whetting your appetite a little bit. When Eve asks for death, he's at the end of his tether, he would rather have anything, and he says to Hashem, please take my life rather than this. Elihu, his one friend, says to him, Eve, Hishomer, al tefen el oven, be careful. Don't turn to this nonsense. Ki al ze bocharto me'oni, because you chose this rather than poverty. Don't forget that, Eve. You had the choice. And you chose this suffering rather than poverty. Bear that in mind all the time, that you've still got your wealth. Hashem has been kind to you. And Rashi explains what that means. Listen carefully to these words in Rashi. Hishomer al tefen el oven. Be careful, don't turn to this nonsense. Ladun veloima haya loy leshafteinu biyisuri anius. Don't say now, Hashem should rather have given me poverty but not caused me the suffering. Ki ala yisurim halalu yesh livchor yeser ma'anius. Because, says Elihu, and look at how Rashi twists it slightly. He doesn't say, because after all, Eve, you asked for it. You wanted this rather than poverty. He says, because it was correct of you to want this rather than poverty. It is proper to prefer this suffering rather than to have poverty. A man who's had honor, as Eve did have, the lomud ba'oisher kol yomov, and he's accustomed to wealth all his days. The yamoid al hamekach ve'ein lo domim, for him to have to stand outside a shop window and look at something in the shop that he would like to buy and be unable to buy it. Uvoish the shov levesei befachi nefesh, and he will have to feel a moment of embarrassment, can't buy it, and have to walk home depressed. That's worse than any poverty. Here Rashi adds in, it's not a situation that you put yourself in, Eve. It's right, it's proper. There is nothing worse than a man who used to be wealthy having to put up with the indignity of poverty. And you're very fortunate, Eve, because you still have your money. You can do chesed, you can do tzedakah, you can help people, you can buy things. It's true you can't get off your bed. It's true you can't move. But with money you can hire whatever help you need. You need nurses, you need doctors, you need medicines, whatever you need. You can hire it and pay well for it, so that you don't have to feel undignified. When a nurse comes to help you, you can pay her very, very well for it, that she really loves to help you. And she gets a great deal out of helping you, not just because you're a tzaddik, but because she's making a lot of money out of it. You don't have to feel indebted to her. And when the doctor comes, the same thing, you don't have to pay medical aid rates. You can pay him 20 times medical aid rates to discharge your feeling of indebtedness. You can call him any time of the day or night and he'll come running because he knows how well he'll be paid. And you can feel good about it. Don't complain about your suffering, Eve. You still have your potency. you still have the ability to discharge your indebtedness, and that's more precious than anything else in the world that you could have, anything else physical in the world that you could have. That's how the Torah sees it. And then we begin to understand, as I explained last night, the terrible issue of lending money with interest. And I asked last night, why is it that it's such a terrible thing? If a man's in need of a loan, surely by the fact that I give him a loan, I'm already helping him. I'm charging him interest, but I'm not even charging him as much as I could get if I used the money in my business or if I invested the money. What's so terrible if I charge him a little bit of interest? If a poor man comes to a doctor, is the doctor not allowed to charge him? If a poor man goes to the baker, is the baker not allowed to charge him for the bread? When the poor man goes to buy his fruit and vegetables at the greengrocer, must the greengrocer not charge him? Is that an issur to charge him? It's not. He's allowed to charge. It might be a chesed for him to give it away as charity, but he's not obligated to do so. So why are people obligated to lend money without interest? Why is it such a terrible prohibition to charge interest? Explains the Medrash. If you understand that poverty is the greatest indignity, then you will understand that asking for a loan is one of the greatest indignities too. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Lo dayo an yusoy. You're not satisfied with the suffering that this man is going through in having to ask for a loan. Elo sha'ato noitel emenu ribis. But you want to take interest from him still. He's desperate, he's down and out. He's lost his dignity. He's suffering worse than Eve. And you now want to charge him still? You want to write him out a bill before you even help him out? That's not acceptable. One has to understand that when he's down and out, you just help. There'll be other ways, you'll get it back in other ways, but when a person is down and out, you help. And you might say, okay, that's for somebody who's down and out. What about a person who's not down and out? He can earn it, he's earning a living. He's got what to live on. But he wants to buy a house, so he wants a loan. He wants to buy a motor car, so he wants a loan. Well, if it's a man that can't get a loan through the normal commercial means, then he is impoverished and he is poor. Because something he needs, he cannot buy. So he's either going to have to take it as charity, or he's got to ask for a loan. And asking for the loan is in itself a great indignity. The only time that asking for a loan is not an indignity is if a person's going to use it for business. And it's not an indignity. A man says, I want to invest money. I have a plan that will make me a lot of money. I want to invest it, and will you please lend me the money free of interest? I believe that a certain share is going to increase in value over the next 18 months. I need 2 million rand, please. Can you lend me 2 million rand interest free for the next 18 months so that I can make a lot of money on the stock exchange? What guarantees? What guarantees? Where's your chesed? Well, please, what, you can still ask me for guarantees? Just lend me the million rand, and you should be happy that you're doing a chesed. That's a different story. There you're going into a business. That's the concept of a heter iske. When it's for business, that's a different story. That's what a heter iske means. You have to differentiate between loans. There are loans that are needed for chesed, and there are loans that are being used for business. If a loan is being used for business, there's a way to charge interest. There's a kosher way to participate in the profits of the business. If the loan is being used for personal needs, then no heter iske. That's not for business. That's not, you don't charge interest on that. That one gives for nothing. That one gives as an act of chesed. And if you look at the wording in the psukim, it's so beautiful. In kesef, the object of the loan or the recipient of the loan is called three different things in these few psukim. Starts off in kesef talveh es ami. Says Hashem, if you lend money to my people, the first time he calls them ami. Realize when you're lending money that you're lending them money to them because they're my people. Not because he needs it, because I'm asking you to do it. Because it's not nice for you to see my people in indignity. That's why you're doing it. So what do we have to have in our mind when we lend another Jew money? We're really lending Hashem the money. We're doing it on Hashem's behalf. We're advancing money to another Jew because he's ami, he's one of Hashem's people. Don't treat him as if you're a creditor and he's a debtor. Don't treat him that way. He's my people and treat him as ami. And don't apply interest. And before that, it says, in case of talveh es ami, and then it says, es ha'oni imoch. That's the second description. a poor man amongst you. Don't forget he's poor, but he's amongst you, he's one of you, he's my people, but he's one of you, and therefore you have a responsibility towards him. So don't think you're doing a big mitzvah. It's a responsibility, you have a responsibility to him. You're doing it for me. He doesn't owe you anything, I owe you. Fine, I'll repay you, says God. And why are you doing it? Because you have a responsibility, he's one of you. And later on, if you take a security, an object of your friend, now he's called Reecha, after you've lent him the money, but you've lent him the money in this way, where you don't let him feel condescended to, where you say to him, please understand, I'm lending you this money because you're a Jew, you're an important person, you're one of Hashem's people, and Hashem hasn't given you the money that you need because Hashem knows that I don't need this money at the moment, it's fine, I'm doing it on Hashem's behalf, don't worry. And it's my responsibility, it's my duty, it's only a pleasure to be able to fulfill that responsibility. Because you have only imach, you're one of us. Don't worry about it. If you're able to make the recipient of the loan feel like that, then he's called Reyecha. After that, he becomes your friend. And in this we see a subtle undertone of a hint of how you make a friend. Talk about friendships, how you make a friend, that's how you make a friend. To be able to do chesed to somebody else in a way where he doesn't feel obligated. That's how you make a friend. Of course he has to feel obligated, that's his business. But it's not you who make him feel obligated. He must make himself feel obligated. That's how one achieves a reah. And so once we understand the difference between physical discomfort and spiritual indignity. Once we understand that physical suffering, no matter how severe, is still at its worst, it's still physical. It only affects the body, it only affects physical things. But spiritual suffering is much more serious. And humiliation and indignity is spiritual suffering, not physical suffering. Once we realize that, and we realize the second principle, and that is that money is a spiritual, or it's a material manifestation of a deep spiritual concept. The concept of being able to discharge indebtedness. Then we understand that there is no greater suffering than the indignity of being unable to discharge indebtedness, which is the indignity resulting from poverty. Now, I mentioned last night as well, because it applies to the Beis HaMedrash, but it applies to this shiur as well as a shiur. And that is that nothing is for nothing. That doesn't mean that one has to pay for everything. But that means that everything is produced at effort and expense. And it's very difficult to realize that sometimes. Children don't realize that. It's always that different children reach the discovery at a different age, but it's an amazing discovery when children realize that you have to pay for electricity. Don't realize. Where does it come from? Who knows where it comes from? It's an amazing discovery when children realize you have to pay for food. Where does food come from? It comes from the fridge. Where does the milk come from? The delivery man brings it. It actually is a major discovery when children suddenly realize you've got to pay for it. They realize it intellectually, but they don't realize it emotionally until they're earning their own money. That takes a long time before they really understand what it means that you've got to pay for something. A guest that goes to somebody else for dinner doesn't realize, although they've had people for dinner themselves, and certainly until they've been in that situation, they certainly don't understand what it costs. Not just in money, but in time, in preparation, in thoughtfulness, in sacrifice, what things the Balabosta couldn't do with her life herself because she was busy organizing the dinner for you. She would have liked to have done other things, met her friends, gone here, gone there. She couldn't. She was busy cooking. She was busy planning the dinner for you. One doesn't realize that. Everything is at a great cost. And the better it is, the more the cost. The higher the quality, the greater the cost. And so it is with each thing in life. There is nothing that just appears. There's nothing that's just here from nothing. There's great cost. Sometimes the cost is a direct material cost, sometimes it's a direct financial cost, and sometimes it's an indirect financial cost. But the cost can always be, cost can't always be measured, but it can always be related to in a financial way, if one needs to do so. There's a cost. And one of the serious negative consequences of the Baal Teshuva movement, which is a wonderful thing that's happened in the world over the last 10 years or so. But one of the negative consequences is that Baal Teshuvahs have become spoiled, like spoiled children in a way. Because organizations have gone out of their way to supply the facilities to bring people back to Yiddishkeit. Now when you supply something without somebody asking you for it, the person who receives it doesn't appreciate the cost. Never. If a child doesn't ask for the food, it's there. Every time he gets hungry, the table's laid. He doesn't appreciate the cost. The child doesn't have to buy a house or ask for a home. He just comes. He comes home from the hospital as a little baby and he comes into a home. There it is. We don't appreciate the cost of things we've never had to ask for. If you ask for it and the person says, you want this? You want this little packet of sweets, little boy? That costs 1 rand 50, please. And he puts his hand in his pocket and he counts out 1 rand 20, 1 rand 25. He says, I've got 1 rand 25. And the shopkeeper says, no, I said 1 rand 50. Go home and get another 25 cents. Then he begins to understand. That's the only time that we relate to the fact that things cost. Everything, it takes money to get things to a place. Or effort, energy. And with this tremendous movement to make Torah available to people, people have ceased to realize that it costs. And how are the costs covered? So you've got Nebuch, Rabbonim go around from door to door and they collect money. That's how they cover the costs. But somebody's paying for it. In our Beis HaMedrash, we've never done that. Because I've always believed it's not the community's responsibility to support the Beis HaMedrash. The Beis HaMedrash is giving a service, people are benefiting from it, and the people must support it. The people who are benefiting from it must support it. That's where it comes from. It's not the business of people who are not benefiting directly from the community to support it. And then, Canon Hora, that's how we've operated. And I mentioned last night that I don't know of an operation, I don't know of an institution, of a Torah institution, that runs at so low a cost as our Beis HaMedrash does. But that low cost is still quite high. And sometimes one has to look around and say, there's a building, who put this building up here? I come every Motzei Shabbos, I sit down for an hour, and I hear a shir, and I walk out. Who put the place up? Who paid for the chairs, the tables? Who's paying for the lights? What about the time and organization that makes it all possible? One actually has to ask that question sometimes. Who's paying? And one has to realize the answer is, I'm very worried about who's paying, because it's not me, which means somebody else is paying for me. Which means I'm indebted. What an indignity. I don't want to be indebted. That's the feeling that there needs to be. I'm benefiting from something from which I'm not giving. Now not everybody is able to pay financially. Some of the people who benefit from the Beis HaMedrash are youngsters, school children, college students. Some people have many burdens, they're not able to pay, or they're able to pay a part. But if they take the expenses of the Beis HaMedrash and divide it by the number of people that benefit from it, they're not able to pay their share. Good. So what does that mean? Somebody else is paying for them. Good. Okay. Then we're here to help each other. But there has to be a feeling of I don't want to be indebted, and if somebody else is paying for me, let me find other ways, at least, of doing something. Let me find other ways of helping. Let me find other ways of investing into it so that I don't remain indebted. So that I don't remain undignified. And so it is even with a shiur like this, to which a lot of people come who are not members of the Beis HaMedrash. And it applies not only to this shiur, but to other shiurim you attend in other places. Exactly the same applies. That the question needs to be asked. And the question needs to be asked, what can I do to help with it? And the reason I'm raising this is twofold. Number one, because it's a very important principle, and I would make the point even if the Beis HaMedrash had no financial shortfalls. But I'm making the point now particularly because in order to provide the services that we do, and by the way, we provide some 20 shiurim a week in the Beis HaMedrash, and to provide those services with everything that goes around with it, it costs, and the income is not covering the cost at the moment. That's the reason that motivates me to mention it particularly at this point. And my feeling is that people who come to the Motzei Shabbos here, and some people have come Kenan Hora for many months and some for many years, and are very welcome, and it's very wonderful that they give of their time on the Motzei Shabbos to learn Torah, and I'm very honored and privileged that they choose to come here to learn Torah on Motzei Shabbos. But on the other hand, there needs to be some kind of a shutfus. People need to make inquiries, whatever it is, to sign a small stop order that once a month a small amount of money goes in, at least for this. And those people who come not only to the Motzei Shabbos shiur, but who come also to other shiurim, you need to make a cheshbon in your mind. Just work out more or less what you need to do in order to discharge your indebtedness. That's if we understand the principle that there is nothing worse than suffering indignity. And there is no greater indignity than having somebody else give me what I need without my having the ability to pay for it, either materially or through some other way. And there is nothing greater than the wonderful dignity that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given to us, provided us with. The dignity which was the foundation of His very creation of the world. The dignity which is the human being's ability to receive kindness, to receive goodness, without being indebted, by being able to discharge that indebtedness through the chesed, either material or non-material, with which He is able to respond.